40 years after the release of the Hanoi Hilton POWs, there is a new book that reveals a companion that sustained them through their darkest days, which was poetry. In the book Taps on the Walls, poems from the Hanoi Hilton, Major General John Borling shares the poetry that he mentally composed and kept memorized during his 6.5 years incarceration in Hanoi. He tapped the poems through thick walls to fellow POWs using a special but forbidden prison tap code. It is a great pleasure to welcome John Borling to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Well, Joe, so good of you to have me, and you gave the whole interview, so thank you very much.
Far from that. Just trying to set up the situation as far as what you endured and how this book came together. Given that it's been 40 years, at what point did you decide that you wanted to share this to a greater audience besides the people that shared that hotel?
The book was, as you pointed out, created mentally and kept memorized, but and then passed through the walls or later face to face to guys, because I wanted my wife, who had no idea I was alive, to have legacy in case, in fact, I did not survive. I had a 3-month-old girl when I left. She was 7.5 when I walked back in the door. Same thing there, wanted to have legacy. Now, obviously survived, had a good run in the Air Force, went back to flying fighters and was able to compete, and that meant a lot. And the poems, which were so very, very private, we put to bed after I spewed them into a tape recorder over at Clark Field when we got released, and kept them private, but got leaned on by people because pieces of them we published over the years when asked, some of the Christmas poetry and other things. And with the encouragement of people like John McCain, Senator McCain, who did the foreword, Mayor Daley, who wrote encouraging words, Gary Sinise, others, Medal of Honor recipients. We've gone ahead and put it out, and just in February, which is the 40th anniversary of release, my release, February 12th, as you indicated, have been so pleased that the messages, which are meant to make you laugh, make you cry, make you think, and frankly have a relevancy to today, have impacted the scene.
The fascinating thing about this story is that you did this without pen, without paper. This was using a code that was forbidden. Talk a little bit about that code and how other people were able to know what you were saying.
The tap code is a derived code that allows you to pass lots of information rapidly through thick walls using a matrix. Divide the alphabet into 5 columns, 5 rows. Drop K off the side, and you can tap something like the letter G would be 2, which would be the second row in a vertical column, and then another 2, which would be its place in that particular row. So the first row is A through E, and then it's F through J, for example. So C would be 1, 1, 2, 3. F would be 2, 1. J would be 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And it's amazing how much information you could pass. And we needed it because communication was forbidden, and yet we had to maintain a chain of command. We had to support one another. We had to use time, that unrelenting minute, which oppressed along with the brutal conditions of the first years anyway, and where we're in isolation or semi-isolation. So we all had to find a way to fill the void. And one of the ways for me was, a lover of liberal arts, was to create poetry. The essence of the human condition, I would suggest, is creation, and God knows we needed to be human.
And you write that in the book. The verse and prose in this volume are not principally about pain or pity, but more about the essence of the human condition. So in many ways, it is obviously the audience, if you will, the people who are receiving this code are in the same position that you are, so that is an understanding. So the message you are trying to convey is ultimately of the things that maybe we all go through in our lives, and you are creating, yes, but you're also telling about what's going through your mind.
Well, and that's the case. If you're going to be honest or genuine, authentic, I guess would be the word, you have to opened up an armored heart, even though we were living in very harsh conditions, especially in the early years. the name of the book, Taps on the Walls, really is a contemporary title. And the reality is that the poem, Taps on the Walls, was written here within the last year. And it speaks to the very subject you were talking about. It speaks to every person who deals with the vicissitudes of life, the punishments and reward that come earned and unearned in life. And then some of us build walls or we tear down walls, but we need to communicate through, around, over, and the poem Taps on the Walls is meant to be a method of dealing, again, with those changes that come in life and often quite suddenly. I like to think, and it seems to be filling a certain hunger out there that people are looking for, again, I would say some ropes to hang on to as they deal with adversity in their own life, or even more difficult to deal with as they deal with success. So the messages in Taps on the Walls are meant to address that, often in a light vein, often in a vein that's designed to really tug at your heartstrings and everything in between. And it's supposed to be easy to take. It's not poetry that you read it and you say, gee, what did the guy say? The language may be pretty, but you know, you feel like a dummy. No, that's not the way it is with my stuff, which a lot of it has flying metaphor, and there's a glossary in the back that helps you through some of that if need be.
Give us a sense of how you were able to be creative using this code and then be able to remember that.
The code was just a vehicle. I mean, the real chore was to create it and then keep it memorized. And I passed it through the walls as a morale booster or as a time user for the fellows with whom you had contact. And as I said, as a way to provide some legacy for my wife and daughter in case I didn't make it. But the code, again, was just the thing we used to communicate.
Right.
I tried to teach French through the walls, and another fellow who was there briefly around another cell tried to teach me Spanish. And I speak enough Spanish now to get in trouble in bars, I guess, would be the best way to put my academic credentials with respect to that language, although I have great regard for language and have been fortunate to live all over the world in the Air Force, and tried to always pick up the language in the country where I was living at the time. But it occurs to me that there's a lot of interest in the format. And again, I use traditional formats, Elizabethan sonnets and quatrains with four-foot lines for the serious folks out there, and rhyme schemes that some say are in the face of the push to blank and free verse, somewhat stylized, and yet I think it's the stylization that gives form and beauty to a lot of the stuff. Hopefully that and others will find it that way. But you may be interested, Joe, that I've been, if Al Gore did the internet, I was told that I invented rap in this book. And I'll give you an example. You want an example?
Yes, please.
All right, well, there's a thing in there called, this one's for the birds. It's about a couple of woodpeckers who take a cross country out to California to peck on some California redwoods. But it starts out, and it says, read this with syncopation and read this with a kind of a southern accent. And it's, well, way down south on the Texas flat where Prickle Pear and Jack Rabbit at, live two woodpeckers in a sawed-off stump, a-looking all the day for something to thump. And it goes on and tells the story. So there's a something, and it's got a funny ending to it. It's funny, but it's also very true.
If I have this right, it seems as though when you were tapping out these poems, you didn't necessarily know who was receiving them, did you?
Oh, no, we would know, yeah, because one of the big things we needed to do was tap out, you know, who's over there. You know, you wanted your name to be out so people knew you were alive. So you always knew who was next door, maybe one guy, maybe two guys. Again, the early years were isolation or semi-isolation, and then as the years went on, you got into larger groups. And after Ho Chi Minh died and there was a raid on the Sante camp, they tend to put us in bigger groups for purposes of security, frankly, and in downtown. But the prisons were the big prison, the Hanoi Hilton, if you will. It was the Maison Centrale. It was the central house, the French colonial prison in downtown Hanoi. And then they had some satellite, still in downtown Hanoi, prisons that they kept various clusters. They tried to keep people who were shot down in certain time frames together so that they wouldn't have any information that they could use. You know, we weren't given updated information or newspapers or anything. In fact, we had nothing. We had bare walls.
Would your fellow captured soldiers create and send you poems and stories?
You know, they would. And some guys would, as I say, teach languages or some other question would come up. Or, like, for example, somebody was trying to create music in their mind, but they didn't have a musical background. Well, I played the piano, and I could recreate the diatonic scale. And so I passed through the major and the minor scales. And then what I thought was a way to derive, in terms of music theory, the sharps and flats associated with that. And it was that kind of exercise that you do, where people would pass through ideas about a house they were going to build or how to tear down a 60 Chevy six-cylinder Bel Air engine. And almost any subject, and a lot of them, as you might imagine, a bit raw. And a lot of humor. Humor was an enabling weapon to struggle against the cruel punishment kind of treatment that we were receiving, again, focusing on those early years. And so you tried to do things to keep up morale. Certainly a lot of jokes passed through the walls. We had a certain amount of gallows humor. Again, it's from the book, but there were optimists and pessimists up there. Have you come across that?
Yes.
That the pessimists thought we were going to die up there and they wouldn't send our bodies home, but the optimists were convinced they would, in fact, send our bodies home. I think that's pretty funny. I don't know what you think.
Well, it is. Well, I mean, you know, obviously, given the context, it's somewhat harrowing, isn't it? When you think about the way you were conveying this poetry and the way that it was written and under the circumstances it was written under, upon your release, is poetry still a part, and was it immediately following a part of your life?
Oh, very, very much so. In fact, again, in the book, I talk about getting over in a bathrobe to the Clark Air Base BX to pick up a tape recorder to start downloading all this stuff I've been carrying around all those years. And the guy comes back, and he's got this radio-looking thing. And I say, no, I want a tape recorder with the reels and, all that stuff. And what he's given me is, he laughs, he's got a cassette recorder in his hand. I had no idea that that's what it was. So there's some future shock, but we downloaded that, got them transcribed, and then put them to bed, as I say, because they showed such a piece of my soul, and I wasn't sure I wanted you or anybody else running around in there. But now, lo, with the passage of time, and my wife Myrna, her concurrence on this thing, we've gone out and are very pleased that apparently the messages and the expressions are taking root with a number of folks, and that makes the game worth the candle.
Absolutely. The name of the book is Taps in the Walls, Poems from the Hanoi Hilton. The book is published by Master Wings. John Borling, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much for sharing with us.
Very gracious of you to have me on, and good luck to you and all your listeners.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Taps on the Walls, Poems from the Hanoi Hilton, published by Master Wings. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.